I hope you're sitting down for this. George Barna's Cultural Research Center found only 13% of born-again Christians have a biblical worldview. That means there's a huge lack of biblical life essentials in our country. AFA is committed to helping churches ignite a hunger for God. You can be part of that with your gift today, and we'll send you Dr. Alex McFarland's DVD, Do Christians Have Permission to Edit Scripture? Visit afa.net/biblical. afa.net/biblical.
Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Thanks for listening to AFR on this Thursday, November the 6th, 2025. And joining me in studio is Ed Vitagliano. Good morning, Brother Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
And Brother Chris Woodward.
Good morning.
Here. And Brother Ray Pritchard. In Florida, sunny Florida, aren't you down there?
I'm in sunny Florida, although not, it's a little overcast right now, but yeah, a little overcast
but
here in Florida.
It's called the Sunshine State. That's what they bill themselves as.
Yeah.
But you told us a few months ago that you and Marlene, your lovely and talented wife there, were going to become snowbirds, right?
And that's exactly right. We got here last night about 11 p.m. and unpacked our stuff. We're at a, you know, I do a lot of speaking for Word of Life.
Right.
They've got a large conference center here in Florida.
Right.
In Hudson, Florida, which is just north of Tampa. And we bought a park model, which is about 1,600 square feet. And we're cozy and snug as a bug in a rug here in Florida.
Now, what is a park model? I'm not familiar with that.
Well, it's considered to be a vehicle. There's actually a license plate in the window there, but it's nobody going to be driving this thing around. It's
1,600 square feet.
I know.
You know what? What I've noticed is that because I did, I mocked snowbirds when I was growing up in New England. Everyone mocks snowbirds until you're old enough to become one. And then you go, you know what?
Yeah.
This is a good idea.
Right. Go to warm weather for the winter, yep. and go back.
Go back home.
In the summertime.
I looked it up, and he's only 10 and a half hours away from us. I could check out a van, and we could be there for a late supper tonight.
You can be there. Come on, we got a great pizza place right down the road.
And
Ed, you know, 7 years ago, 8 years ago, if you'd said, "Will you and Marlene ever become snowbirds?" I would have laughed at the idea,
yeah.
But. Oh, how times change,
yes.
Right? Life rolls on, and I'm just tired of the snow and the ice and the cold weather. And so starting today through the end of March, we're going to be here at Word of Life. They call it Word of Life Palm Grove, and there's about 200 other units around us. It's a Christian Christian RV park or Christian snowbird haven, if you want to call it that. And so we're really glad to be here.
How close are you to Tampa, you said?
About 25 minutes north of the Tampa airport.
You know what? They have a good hockey team in Tampa. You and Marlene should become hockey fans.
What's the name of the Tampa Bay Lightning. Okay.
Yeah.
And it'd be a good thing for snowbirds to become interested in.
Interested in the hockey, right?
Right.
Listen, fellas, I'm sorry, but I was stuck at 1,600 square foot car. and I never got off
it's
that.
It's called the Beast.
I've been waiting to ask Ray, what are you talking about? Are you talking about an RV? Is that what you're talking about?
No.
It sounds like a mobile home almost.
Okay. If you took it.
A trailer?
If you took a mobile home and shrunk it down a little bit, but still kept the wheels on it, right?
Yeah.
But made them stationary so that it can't really go anywhere. It's considered a vehicle, but it's nobody going to be moving this thing. And they built onto this. The people who owned it before us, they built onto this. So originally it probably had about 500-600 square feet, but now 1,600. So we're pretty happy here.
Oh, will you send me a picture of that after
yes,
the show?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
I'm trying to envision this. Maybe I've seen one before, but I can't. Why would you have wheels on something that doesn't move?
Well, you know, probably because that's how they got it there.
That's how they got it there. That's right. That's right. Okay. It's not. It's not a. There are, in fact, just next to us, there's a true RV next to us, the kind that you hook up and,
yeah,
and drive around the country.
Right.
This is not like that, but it's considered by Florida to be a vehicle.
Okay.
And so there is a license plate in the in the window of the unit.
Wow.
Sounds like something NASA would be involved in or something.
If you're if you're going to build a little community on Mars.
Something that you shoot out into outer space and float around the Earth, you know, like the International Space Station or something, a trailer.
Well, you could, that, you know, for those who having a hard time finding a home.
Yeah, outer space may be the option.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of room up there.
Let me just say, if you did that and started putting homes out in outer space, I guarantee within months you'd have a Dollar General out there.
That's exactly right. We've got one just down the road.
Yeah, there you go. It's going to happen.
Don't make me laugh.
I know, you're struggling.
I've got this little sniffle thing coming on, and you know how when you start laughing and you got the little sniffle thing that makes you cough and sound like you're taking your last gasp at life there.
So that only makes me want to make you laugh even more.
I know. Wow. All right, so
yes,
Dr. Alex McFarland will be on with us at the bottom of the hour. We look forward to visiting with Alex. You may have heard about this controversy involving Tucker Carlson, the famed conservative commentator, many years on Fox News. I used to, you know, really enjoy his shows.
Yeah.
Was a fan of his. But he's taken a turn here on Israel. And it's got a lot of people scratching their heads on what is he doing? Why is he saying these things? And it comes off as anti-Semitic.
And some people think it may split the Republican Party or the conservative movement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So.
So we're going to talk about that some with Alex. We asked him ahead, do you want to dive into this one? Because it's somewhat complex.
Yeah.
So anyway, and it's hard to criticize people you admire and have admired for a long time. And I've been an admirer of Tucker Carlson. But now
be bottom of the hour.
Yeah, but now I'm going, what is this about?
Yeah.
And where is this going? You want to talk about it now?
No, I was just going to say, I just wanted our listeners to know, make sure you stick around.
It's
bottom of the hour.
It's clickbait.
I'll share a few links for the things that we'll talk about with him.
Yeah. So if you want to hear what Alex has to say, you're doing us at the bottom of the hour. All right, so what's our first story, Chris?
Well, you may not be the only American with the sniffles over the next few days, and I say that because a shocking blast of winter weather A shocking blast of winter weather is headed for the East Coast. Ray, I got bad news for you. Did you say you're in Hudson, Florida?
Yes.
Even you're going to be impacted by this. The high on Tuesday where Ray lives or is moving to, 58. Which is
That's
unseasonably cold.
Cold weather's hunting Ray down.
Yes, it followed you from KC. By the way, it's going to be a high of 58 today in Kansas City. But anyway, a shocking Arctic blast with temperatures more akin to mid-January than early November is poised to overspread the eastern half of the U.S. starting around November 8th, sending tens of millions into an early deep freeze.
Oh, wow. Well, I tell you what, it's not going to last long.
No, a couple days.
48 hours. But still, it's unwanted.
Well, that's for sure.
And I was looking at our temperature here in Tupelo, MS. Let's see what it's going to be on Monday. The low is 24 for November. That just ain't right.
I'm going to call in cold.
No, it's not, and it's substantially lower than the average for this time of year, and it's going to include. I think I've read 20 states. So, folks, if you're listening to us and you're in one of those states, man, put those covers on your faucets and bring the plants in.
Yeah,
and whatever else you do when it turns cold, your pets. Don't leave your pets out in bad weather.
Yeah, yeah. So what is the Ray? Look at your phone. What's your low on Monday night?
Okay, right now let's see. Monday night. Okay, it's going to be in the day 63, but then down to 39.
Wow,
That's probably going to be a record low.
Probably,
I'm guessing for November, the whatever it will be.
Well, I know who your neighbors are going to blame.
Yeah, right.
The new couple.
What did you do?
The couple from Kansas City comes here, and all of a sudden we get a cold blast from the north.
Yeah. Building snowmen.
Ray's going to be like, "I'm from Alabama. Right. I promise."
Really? I didn't do this.
Right. I didn't do this. Well, anyway, it is going to be a couple of days of shocking weather for a lot of the country, as you know, somewhere the global warming people are just crying because they just can't catch a break.
Greta Thunberg.
Yeah. Al Gore somewhere. They're
weeping tears of sorrow.
Yeah, nothing's going good for them right now.
Right.
In all seriousness, there's a big climate conference that's about to get underway in Brazil. They had to go to exotic location. No, unless you want to send me.
Well, I mean, if you,
I'll learn Portuguese between now and the time I fly out. If you want me to go.
Right. So how do you know this? You get their newsletters?
Oh no! It's well documented. There's a climate conference kicking off. We're not going to be a part of it U.S. wise because the Trump administration
in Brazil,
as we have reported on the show, calls climate change a quote con job.
So we're not
going to go.
All right, you're listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Next story, Chris.
Speaking of President Trump, he had a couple of things to say yesterday about New York City mayor-elect Zohran Mamdani.
Uh-huh.
Now, Mamdani has been referred to by many of his critics as everything from a socialist to a communist. Bottom line, his policies are radical and not what a far-left Democrat has pushed. He's way to the left, Zohran Mamdani.
He says he's an unapologetic Democrat.
Democratic socialist.
Democratic socialist.
Yes.
So he's
He's
proud of that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, President Trump has said for weeks that Mamdani is a communist. And yesterday in a speech, Trump said, "We have a choice, communism or common sense." Clip two.
But the communists, Marxists, socialists, and globalists had their chance, and they delivered nothing but disaster. Decision facing all Americans could not be more clear. We have a choice between communism and common sense. Our opponents are offering an economic nightmare. We're delivering an economic miracle. The United States is not going communist in any way, shape, or form. We'll stop it. We're going to stop it.
What exactly is he just reacting to the election?
Yes. So basically, Mamdani, people are saying that Mamdani is going to have a national impact on politics going forward. There are going to be other socialist or communists running for office to try to replicate what's been done in New York wherever they live.
If they do that, it'll be an utter failure, in my opinion.
Statistics would back you up on that.
Other than the big cities.
Yeah. Seattle.
Chicago. Well, some of them are already there.
Chicago, maybe. Yeah.
Some of them already there. Chicago, Boston.
A lot of people don't know. This is not the first socialist elected as a mayor. It's the first socialist elected as mayor for New York City. Mm-hmm. I was writing a column for our magazine, The Stand magazine. And folks, if you want to get that, you can go to AFA.net, sign up for that. But I was doing a little background research following the election of Mamdani. Mm-hmm. We've had... according to a report from the University of Washington, over 1,000 socialists elected to serve as mayors of cities and towns since the 1900s.
Yes.
In Milwaukee, they had three socialists in the early 1900s. So this is not a brand new thing that has happened in our country. But it is a first for a city the size of New York and the importance
of
New York City.
There's a part of me that's glad he got elected. Okay? Let me tell you why. I think we need a test case here that all of America can look at and go, did this work or not? Because I'm going to tell you, it's going to be an abject failure.
Yes.
Because if he's even able to get his policies implemented.
Enacted. Yeah, absolutely.
Because
right.
he has to deal some with the state legislature in
the
Albany
office.
And the governor's office. Now, she supported him, but his basic philosophy doesn't work in an American system of capitalism, unless you radically change everything and you become a communistic type.
Right.
You know, government.
Yes.
And so anyway, go ahead.
I can give you an example here on the local level in Mississippi. This gentleman has since been replaced by somebody else in office. But our own Jackson, Mississippi, the state capital, had a Democratic Socialist mayor in the last couple of years. Chokwe Antar Lumumba, he served from 2017 to 2025. He was a member of the Democratic Party and described himself as a Democratic Socialist. The reason I bring him up is because Jackson had problems when he entered office. Jackson still has problems after he left office. It still has a lot of crime. People don't want to live there. The potholes are still there. So Democratic Socialist policies do not work.
Well,
because things he ran on are still problems.
But he was twice elected.
That's true.
To your point, Tim, about the state government, they rely, Albany relies on tax revenues from New York City in large part to fund the rest of the state. And if Mamdani's policies are, as we think they will, are going to drive businesses and corporations and the wealthy out of New York City, that's a big blow to the tax base, not only for New York City, but also for the state coffers. He may get some resistance on the state level.
Yeah, but I'm going to tell you, you know, promising free stuff to everybody is a winner.
Especially when it's young people.
With people who haven't had a dose of reality.
Mm-hmm.
Ray, go ahead.
You know, you sent around an article, Tim, that said the long-time residents, people who have been in New York City more than 10 years, they voted overwhelmingly for Cuomo over Mamdani. But for people who've lived in New York City, say, 5 years or less, they voted something like 80 or 85% for Mamdani over Cuomo, suggesting to me that there is a huge generational break, that the newer people either agree with Mamdani or they don't care. And it's the folks who've been there a long time who know exactly what's about to happen to the city that they love and have called home for many, many years. And in a sense, Tim, I'm torn. You said, well, look, let's just make this a test case. And yet we both feel New York City is the greatest city in the world. And you hate to see a great city go into become a dumpster fire, much worse than before.
That's true.
To Tim and everybody's point here, there's a guy named Andrew Stanton. He's a weekend staff writer at Newsweek, and I just shared this in addition to the Cuomo stuff. Zohran Mamdani's win could be great news for J.D. Vance. That's the headline on Newsweek. And the argument is he's going to be terrible, and they're going to be able to say, look what happens when you vote in these
people. All right, give me three of the – Ed, you've studied this some, but three of the things this guy promotes that are just
– about Mamdani?
Yeah, that go ahead.
Well, he wants to freeze rents. We talked about this yesterday.
That's right. I'm going to play the part of the 28-year-old in New York City, okay?
Yeah,
and I'm 28 years old. I've been there 3 years living in New York City.
And you can't afford it
anymore.
And
I'm trying to decide what I'm going to do here, and I'm listening to this guy run for mayor, okay? So I'm reacting to what your campaign promises.
Okay. So I'm gonna play the part of Mamdani. Okay, so we are gonna freeze rents so they don't go up anymore.
That's what I'm talking about.
That's right.
Right there. So I'm for that. I'm voting for that, my friend.
And
do you know what? Because these landlords are sticking it to us.
That's right.
And I'm tired of it. Somebody needs to put them in their place. So I'm for that.
That's what I'm gonna do.
Good.
I'm also going to create government-owned grocery stores so that we can bring food prices down to where everyone can afford it, because Kroger and Walmart and Target and whoever else is selling groceries,
thank you,
they are sticking it to the customers.
Thank you. I'm tired of eating ramen noodles.
Yes.
And I am voting for you, my friend. You're going to have government-run grocery stores, so it's fair.
Yeah.
So it's fair. That's right. And then the third thing I'm going to say is if you want to ride the bus or the subway, you can do it for free.
Okay.
And so even if you can't find an apartment to rent, you can sleep on the subway.
I'm with you.
Yep.
Subway and free buses.
Yep.
You know why? Because I see a lot of rich people out there.
Oh,
and
exactly.
they got big cars and limousines and everything
nice
like that.
Nice homes.
It's not fair that those of us who can't afford those cars have to pay for our buses and our subways.
Yeah, these people are so rich. So they can take their family to Chili's.
So I'm voting for you. What else you got? What you got on?
May I add one?
Yeah, yes. Go ahead.
He wants a $30 minimum wage in the not too distant future in New York City.
God, are you serious?
I'm dead serious.
Now I'm double high fiving.
Dead serious.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
That's what I'm for.
We're raising the roof.
$30 minimum wage.
You got my. No wonder you're getting. You're gonna get my vote and all of my friends.
This is why people like Ronald Reagan, when I was in diapers, said things like government is the problem, because when government sets things like this, like you must pay people this amount of money, and you tack on all these other things like utilities and regulations, cost of
listen,
all these things, that's why food costs as much as it does in New York City.
Me and my friends, we can't live on $17 an hour. So if this guy's going to raise it to 30, and stick
I am. I'm going to apparently.
Well, thank you.
Apparently, that's exactly what I'm going to do.
I'm voting for you.
You know what else?
What?
I am against the police. I have said publicly I'm for defunding the police. Maybe I won't go that far now, but I'm still against them.
Good.
And people who commit crimes, if they're minorities in this city, are only committing those crimes because they have been failed by the system. So we are going to have no cash bail and a bunch of other things you criminals are going to love.
And use that money that you defund the police and pay for help me out some more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with some more social programs. Help pay for my health care. Will you do that too? Insurance.
I'll have to get back to you, but I don't see why not.
Okay. All right. So there we go. So you wonder why he gets all the votes from the younger crowd,
mm-hmm.
and from people who aren't native.
Just moved
born,
there.
Just
in
moved
the last,
there.
Yeah.
There you go.
So I'm with you, Tim. This is going to be kind of fun to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you live in New York City, but
I tell you what, so. what's going to happen pretty quick if he starts giving free bus and free public transit.
Yeah.
Subways and buses, you're going to find vagrants and homeless people and mentally ill people and criminals all over. They're going to be sleeping on these places.
Yeah.
And Mondami's philosophy is don't kick them out because that's inhumane.
Mm-hmm.
Am I right?
They have a right to be there.
They have a right
to be
there.
To be on there.
Yeah.
So you watch how that works, okay?
Yeah. Do we have time for one more clip? It's not very long. Okay. To Tim's point on why young people fall for this stuff.
A lot of points.
Somebody
which point are you talking about?
Why young people buy this kind of stuff. Emily Sturge with Campus Reform was on Fox and Friends this morning talking about why youngsters fall for this stuff. Clip 4.
For over a decade, we've been sounding the alarm at the Leadership Institute's Campus Reform that the higher education system is indoctrinating young minds with this sugar-coated view of socialism while also demonizing capitalism. But you don't have to just take it from me. We can actually look at some college course examples. Harvard University taught a course that taught that consumerism and capitalism leads to climate change. Williams College in Massachusetts taught that capitalism leads to worker suffering and the poor starving. And so when we dig into course syllabi, it makes sense of why so many young people, specifically in New York, Mamdani won 75% of the youth vote there. It comes right from the classroom.
I think the most interesting statistic here is what Ray mentioned earlier, the article that I sent out, and that is that native New Yorkers voted for Cuomo. And the newcomers, the newbies to New York City voted, and the younger crowd voted for the reasons we just role-played there, voted for Mondami. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens now. When will he be sent into, January 1?
Well, he is, this is from the New York Post, he is saying that he plans to take aggressive action on his socialist agenda, declaring it is a mandate because he won by so high a percentage.
Right.
I think New Yorkers are going to find out very quickly what Zoran Mamdani intends for the Big Apple is now, according to a great headline from the New York Post, it's now the Red Apple.
I see what they did there.
Yep.
All right, we'll be back with Dr. Alex McFarland coming up after this short timeout. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
We're living in a time when truth is under attack. Lies are easy to tell, easy to spread, and easy to believe. But truth is costly. And nowhere is the cost greater than for mothers in crisis. When a woman is told abortion is her only option, silence and lies surround her. But when she walks into a preborn network clinic, she's met with compassion, support, and the truth about the life growing inside her. That moment of truth happens through a free ultrasound, and it's a game changer. When a mother sees her baby and hears that heartbeat, it literally doubles the chance she'll choose life. Preborn Network clinics are on the front lines, meeting women in their darkest hour, loving them, and helping them choose life and sharing truth. Friend, this is not a time to be silent. It's a time for courage, for truth, for life. Just $28 provides one ultrasound and the opportunity for a mother to see her baby, to help her choose truth and life. Donate today. Call pound 250 and say baby. That's pound 250 baby. Or give online at preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
This is today's issues. Email your comments to comments@AFR.net. Past broadcasts of today's issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at AFR.net. Now, back to more of today's issues.
Welcome back, everybody, to today's issues on the American Family Radio Network. I'm Tim with Ed, Chris, and Ray. We thank you for listening to AFR. And joining us now is our colleague and good friend, Dr. Alex MacFarlane, co-host of Exploring the Word each weekday afternoon right here on AFR. Alex and Bert do a live Bible study every weekday from 3 to 4 o'clock Central Time. So you want to check that out if you haven't already been listening to Exploring the Word. Alex, you there?
I am here. Good morning.
Are you in North Carolina today or traveling around?
Yes, sir. I'm in North Carolina. Coming back from 2 days of preaching in Georgia.
Oh, what were you there for?
Well, I had the great privilege. I was in a wonderful couple of churches yesterday, but okay. I was also in a public high school and middle school to speak to the kids, and it was really a great opportunity.
Oh, awesome. Okay, so let's talk about Tucker Carlson. What were you pointing at, Chris?
Oh no, I'm gonna queue up this link and share for you.
Okay,
I'm sorry.
So, for those who don't know, most people are familiar with this controversy now. It's been out there in conservative media and Christian media, but Tucker Carlson has. Well, Ed, why don't you describe what it is he's gotten into here, if you would?
Well, there is a controversy within the conservative movement in this country now over Israel and U.S. support for Israel, the war in Gaza, which is, has ended at least temporarily with the ceasefire and the 20-point plan that the president has tried to put into practice. So the controversy is that Tucker Carlson and some other fairly high-profile conservatives, including Candace Owens, appear to be drifting into an anti-Semitic point of view, with Tucker Carlson even denying, I think he called it a Christian heresy to believe that the Jews are still God's chosen people, and that it's a heresy to believe that Christians should be supporting Israel in the Middle East. And recently, Tucker Carlson kind of increased that, kind of fired up the controversy even more by hosting on his podcast, I think it was his podcast, Nick Fuentes, who is a fascist, a absolute anti-Semite, said he's a fan of Hitler, he's a fan of Joseph Stalin, and Tucker Carlson has been criticized for not being hard on Fuentes when he was on his program, but giving him softball questions. So, Alex, there may be some Christians who are just now finding out about this, but conservatives, because of the influence of the evangelical vote inside the Republican Party, have generally said, we're going to support Israel. They're the only true democracy in the Middle East. And there is a strong link between the Christian community and the Jewish people and the nation of Israel. But now that appears to be at least up for debate, something I wasn't sure I would ever see in my lifetime. What's your take on this?
Yeah. Well, I've been very, very disappointed with Tucker Carlson. And my goodness, you know, after interviewing Ted Cruz, he said that support for Israel was, quote, a brain virus. I mean, that's just, besides being unbiblical, contributing to anti-Semitism, that's just not even good journalism. But I will tell you, Charlie Kirk and I had several conversations about this, and you know, Charlie Kirk, rest his soul, he was a, you know, he was a devout Christian and a fervent patriot, and you know, in no way am I trying to slam the legacy and the impact of Charlie Kirk, but you know, we had had discussions, and he just flat out asked me. Charlie Kirk said, Alex, why are you so pro-Israel? And I said, well, for a lot of reasons, you know, pull up a chair. But 5 days before Charlie Kirk died, he texted me, and we had had several very productive conversations because he, like, I know this is going to sound like some, you know, old guy, but Tim and Ed, a lot of younger evangelicals, they love the Lord, they're Christian, but they've just been taught wrong about Israel and that somehow the Abrahamic covenant had been broken 2,000 years ago. And, it, you know, it goes by a number of names like replacement theology, supersessionism, fulfillment theology, but that the church is now Israel. And you know, we love Charlie. We love TPUSA. I'm speaking for two TPUSA events next week, even in Tennessee. But let me just say this. Charlie, at least several months ago, was flirting with what I would call replacement theology. He was not, and I want to repeat, not anti-Semitic. But I said, Charlie, you must support Israel. And I said, the church is not Israel. Israel is Israel. Now, there's a lot about the fulfillment of God's promises in the Abrahamic covenant. To his credit, Tim, Charlie texted me 5 days before he died, and he said, keep the talking points about Israel coming. He said, I am teachable. That's what he said to me. Now, here's a verse, and by the way, but Candace Owen and Tucker Carlson, at least part of their statements that are, I believe, anti-Semitic and just bad history and bad hermeneutics. And then part of Charlie Kirk, I mean part of Tucker platforming Nick Fuentes, which was a disastrous move. That guy should, nobody should listen to Nick Fuentes. But you know, I reminded Charlie and a lot of the younger evangelicals, pastors and leaders that I mentor, like Romans 11:18, speaking of we Gentiles, you know, lest there's a superiority complex among Gentile believers. Romans 11:18 says, do not boast above the branches. You are just a branch. The root supports you. In other words, you know, we Gentile believers are the ones that are late to the party. Now, praise God, if you're a believer in Jesus Messiah, you're grafted in. But the Abrahamic covenant is an everlasting covenant, and God is not done with the nation of Israel.
Ray?
Alex, I've got a question here that I think Tucker used an interesting phrase at one point. He talked about Christian Zionism. That's not a phrase a lot of people would be familiar with. So from two questions for you, Alex. Number one, what exactly is Christian Zionism? And number two, do you consider yourself a Christian Zionist?
That's a great question. You know, it's not really a term that I've ever heard any dispensational pro-Israel Christians really use about themselves.
Right.
The term Zionism, you know, came about really in the 19th century as there was, you know, Jewish leaders around the world were prayerfully thinking about how to restart the nation of Israel. And it really came about after World War One. Balfour, Churchill, Harry Truman, and some people like David Ben-Gurion and Chaim Weizmann, who was from England. But Zionism was the move to reestablish the nation of Israel, which, guys, Bert and I write about this in our brand new book. And Bert Harper and I say that the reestablishment of the nation of Israel is, quote, a super sign of the fulfillment of Bible prophecy, not just a sign, but a super sign. Now, to your question, Ray, would I consider myself a Christian Zionist? Well, if by Zionist you mean that I believe what the Bible says about the children of Abraham, the Abrahamic covenant, that the land belongs to Israel, that one day at some future point Israel will occupy their land in a state of belief, and that Israel has the right to exist, the right to self-defense, and the right to self-determination, sure, then I'm a Zionist. But I think people like Tucker Carlson and the pro-Hamas left, they would use it as a very pejorative term to slander. But you know, it's almost like the term Christian nationalist. I've had people say, oh, Alex, you're a Christian nationalist. I'm like, well, I am a Christian, and I care about America. I mean, does that make me a bad guy? Christian Zionist, I am a Christian, and I believe in what the Bible says about the Jewish people, and I categorically condemn anti-Semitism. That makes me a bad guy. Fair enough, I'm a bad guy.
Yeah. Listen, as I said before, and I think we all are in this camp, you know, admirers of the Fox News version of Tucker Carlson, right?
Right.
When he was back on Fox News, he did some great journalism and interviews and insights. So I always look forward to, when I tuned in, hearing what he had to say about world events and current events and politics and such. But this, do you cancel somebody because of this? Do you say, because you agree with them on 90% of stuff, but 10% is...
You're talking about Tucker Carlson.
Uh-huh. Now. Uh-huh. Do you...
And not...
He's supposed to speak at the Turning Point USA National Conference in about a month or so in Phoenix, Arizona. And this is... This will be on Erica Kirk, whether he stays on the docket or not.
Because she is currently CEO. Now the CEO, president of Turning Point USA. Yeah, this is – that's a great question, Alex.
I had it.
And it was Tim's question.
Yeah, I had it. You know, I'm not bragging. I'm just saying.
So
I had it.
What do you do with – now, I'm in absolute agreement with you on Nick Fuentes. You don't have him. You don't platform him on your show. We're not going to have him on TI to question his beliefs. His beliefs are so out there. We just assume people understand. We reject. He says things like, not only is, you know, a big fan of, you know, Hitler and Stalin, he thinks only white men should be making, not even women. Only white men should be making political decisions in America. I mean, this guy is a racist. You throw all the labels into a basket, and that applies to Nick Fuentes. But Tucker Carlson, like Tim said, you know, I would say 95% of what he says, I go, wow, that's a good way of putting it. What do you think Turning Point USA is going to do? You think they're going to have allow him to speak?
I don't know. This is a real test of leadership and conviction. And while I have spoken for TPUSA events, and I mean, like, you know, I do care about TPUSA and cared about Charlie, and certainly, you know, like the whole wide world, you know, my heart was just broken when that happened to Charlie. In fact, Frank Turek and I had a long phone conversation. Frank is a friend of 30 years, and just the trauma of that, you know, is still being processed. But at the same time, this illustrates the importance of sound teaching. And there are a lot of younger evangelical leaders, Charlie Kirk was one of them, that had some gaps in their knowledge about the understanding of Israel. And I was trying to help him with that, and he was very responsive. And I just want to be very clear, the love, the respect, the camaraderie that I had with Charlie, but at the same time, I told him, I said, brother, I love you in the Lord, but you're wrong about Israel, and I want to help you.
Hey,
and he said, I'm teachable, you know.
Hey, it's just so our listeners understand, and maybe you can clarify this since you did know Charlie Kirk. I don't know how he grew up, but he was in the process of learning about Christianity as he had made a commitment to Christ. So he was in a lot of ways like a young Christian with regards to theology, wasn't he?
He was very much a work in process. We all are. Guys, I want to be clear. I'm learning, and you know, I've been saved 39 years, and I'm learning. But there were some things, and I told him, I said, as your older brother, let me help you, because, and I'm not going to repeat it, but he had some teachings that were very much reflective of what I would call replacement theology. And I said, look, there's one verse, Galatians 6:16, that says, blessed be the Israel of God. But here's the thing, guys. If the Protestant Reformation had happened May 15, 1948, I guarantee replacement theology would have never come about. It really, in the aftermath of the Protestant Reformation, and it's, you know, fortuitous that we're talking about this near October 31, but, you know, as the gospel spread throughout Europe, then people begin to think, okay, well, what do we do with the book of Revelation? Because it talks all about Israel, and there really is no nation of Israel. And, John Calvin, and very much replacement theology is associated with Reformed and Calvinistic theology. Calvin didn't even become a Christian until almost 10 years after Luther and the Wittenberg Door, October 31, 1517. I am convinced, Tim and Ed, if the Reformers had known about the rebirth of Israel in 1948, replacement theology would never have really emerged. Do you see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're talking to Dr. Alex McFarland. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Ray, I'm going to pitch you a question. You've been a pastor for a long time.
Sure.
How you like that set up?
And here we go. Anything can happen.
And you like Alex, have spent much of your life studying and teaching the Bible to others. And I know you share the theology that Alex has expressed here. So y'all are on the same page as we are here.
100%.
But I have to ask you to answer the question. When I read the New Testament, when it comes to this kind of teaching, I'm just going to be honest with you. Sometimes it's a little confusing to me because it's the Jesus came to redeem the world, and
true.
So the Old Testament is Jesus' relationship exclusively with the Israelites, with the children of Abraham, with the Hebrews, whatever you want to call it. There are several names we give to the people today we call Jews. But that changed with Jesus, and now salvation, God's relationship is with everybody, not just with the Jews. So how does that square with the Abrahamic, the covenant still being with the God's chosen people? Does that make sense?
Well, sure. And okay. Let me say two or three things, and Alex, jump in here with anything else. Number one, it is quite true that God's focus in the Old Testament was the nation of Israel. But remember, God was very clear. He wanted Israel to be, and it says this in the Old Testament, a light to the nations, that if Israel had kept the covenant, if Israel had followed the way of the Lord, they would have been a light to the surrounding Gentile pagan nations. They were to be the light showing the way to the one true God. So we don't want to say that God was only exclusively concerned about Israel, because God always had a heart for all the nations. In fact, you mentioned the Abrahamic covenant. It goes back to Genesis chapter 12, verse 3. In you shall, and that is Abraham and his descendants finally coming down to Jesus, in you, through Jesus, ultimately shall all the nations be blessed. We know that God always intended to bless the nations through the seed of Abraham, because that's what the Apostle Paul quotes in Galatians chapter 3. So God always had a heart for the nations. It was seen most clearly through the blessing he gave to Israel, but in the New Testament, it simply expanded. The blessings of the Abrahamic covenant are now extended to all people, so that anybody, anywhere, anytime can come to faith in Jesus Christ. They can become part of God's family. The last thing I want to say, Tim, is that the fact that God now wishes to bless all the nations through the gospel of Christ does not, and in fact cannot, cancel the specific promises he made to his people, the nation of Israel, in the Old Testament. Those promises are still for ethnic Israel in the future. God has not forgotten his ancient people. He will ultimately fulfill all the promises, because Genesis, Romans 11 says that when Christ returns, all Israel will be saved. There's coming a time when the Jewish people will see the one they have pierced, and they will mourn, and a fountain of salvation will be opened up for the ancient Jewish people in that day. God always intended to bless the nations, but he has not canceled his promises to Israel.
Amen. You're listening to Today's Issues. Alex McFarland with us. That was comments of Ray Pritchard there, Ed Battagliano, and Chris Woodward. Anything else on this topic you want to speak to?
No, I agree with, I agree. This is not always easy to kind of sift through. There is a verse in the Gospels where Jesus, in talking to the religious leaders of Israel, he says that the kingdom will be taken away from you and given to a people who will be the recipients of it. Some people, if you just sit on that verse, it looks as if Jesus has cut off the nation of Israel. But other places in the gospel, Jesus tells the Jews, your house will be left to you desolate until you can say, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord, which even in the gospels opens up the hope for the restoration of Israel to God through the Messiah. And then when
Messiah being Jesus Christ.
Jesus Christ. And then when you read Romans 11, as both Alex and Ray have pointed out, Paul makes this explicit. He makes it explicit that unbelieving Jews have been cut off as unbelieving branches. Paul warns Gentile believers, don't get cocky, because if you stop believing and trusting in Jesus Christ, you'll be cut off. And then he says and talks about the blessing that'll come to the world when Israel comes back to him whom they have pierced. And as Ray and Alex have said, all Israel eventually will be saved. Paul makes explicit in Ephesians 2, we cannot and Gentiles will not enter the kingdom without the Jews. This is part of what Paul says God has done. He has knocked down the dividing line between Jew and Gentile. And so it seems clear that God has a plan for natural Jews according to his Old Testament promise that there will come a time when en masse the people that we now call Jews according to the flesh will come to Christ. And Gentiles and Jews will celebrate together in the kingdom. So it can get a little hairy, but part of what Alex is saying is there's been a serious lack of teaching about this, and a lot of younger evangelicals haven't heard any of the things we've been talking about on this program, and they are falling prey to a view that says Israel is cast off into the outer darkness, and they're no different than anybody else. And while it's true that they have to be saved through Christ, they're not just like anybody else because of the promise God made to their forefathers.
And this doesn't mean what all you guys have described here in terms of what is the biblical attitude Christians today should have towards Israel and the Jews does not mean that everything the Israeli government does or doesn't do is ordained by God.
Right.
Or should be Israel right or wrong.
Yes, exactly.
You don't have to have that approach in order to support the nation of Israel and the Jewish people. But
it doesn't mean that I don't support Israel just because I don't want U.S. boots on the ground
right.
in the Middle East.
Right. So very well said. Thank you so much, Alex, for being on with us, and great words of wisdom there, my friend.
Godspeed. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Alex and Ray, you had some great words of wisdom, too.
You sure did, Ray.
Thank you.
Right. No, you're welcome, and I had some great questions there. Nobody. Was
All good. Of us were great.
We were great.
It was a great segment, folks.
Hey,
no, listen, it was. Yeah. That was. I think that'll be helpful for a lot of our listeners. Yeah.
We'll be back. Thank you, Chris, for your great presence.
Thanks.
Yes, we'll be back momentarily with more of today's issues.